Hey folks, Scott Weingart here. I got a lot of requests to have a show about left ventricular assist devices, aka LVADs. And there's no better person to talk about that than Zach Shiner, one of the MDs at the same shop as Joe Bellezzo, who you heard on the ECMO episode. Those folks do a lot of crazy stuff with really sick cardiac patients at Sharp Memorial in San Diego. Now, if you're an MRAP listener, Zach Shiner had an episode with Stu Swadron on LVADs. He felt there was more to say. He felt he didn't get everything he wanted to discuss in on that MRAP episode. So even if you heard him there, this stuff is different, and you should listen to this one as well. So we'll get to Zach, and then afterwards I'll do a quick summary, but I'm sure you still are going to have questions after all of that. Put them in the comments. Put them in the comments of this show on mcrit.org, and then I will reach out to Joe and Zach and actually get them on for an interview format, and I will pose all those questions, and we'll really get this subject covered to the point where if one of these people popped into your emergency department, you would feel comfortable managing them.
Hey, Scott. This is Zach Shiner. Hey, thanks for having me on your show. I was asked by my stellar colleague, Joe Bellezzo, who you interviewed a couple months ago, about our experience down at Sharp with the use of ECMO in arresting patients. I was asked by him to do a talk on LVAD, and I think this is an interesting subject. Certainly, we have this center of cardiothoracic dominance where we have a lot of these types of patients come in with us, and also it gives us the benefit of having the use of ECMO. So left ventricular assist device, or LVAD, is a gnarly type of patient. The first time you see one walk in, it can really weird you out. You see a wire sticking out of somebody's chest on a patient that has no pulse and he's sitting up and talking to you. It can throw you off as far as everything you thought was thought to be sacred in medicine. But what these things do is they augment the left ventricle. They augment the patients with severe heart failure. They give them better flow, and they allow people who have severe disease like New York Heart Class 4 to have better activities of daily living, have better lifestyles. And the way that they do this is the CT surgeons put an inlet cannula into the left ventricle. They run it through a pump, which creates non-pulsatile laminar flow and pushes it into the aorta as the outflow track through a second cannula. There is a wire that comes out of the pump and goes down into the system controller outside the body and leaves the body just in the right upper quadrant. With that system controller, that's really the brains of the machine. It allows us a set of RPMs. It allows us to say what the flow should be and makes the decisions as far as changing that in vivo. Outside of the system controller, there are two battery packs. These are held in holster-like vests, things that they put in, sits right underneath your armpit, and it gives power to the machine. Now, understanding what the sort of destination of these patients is pretty important, because it allows you to sort of get yourself a good rapport with the patient. This is how I use it. So just like when some congenital abnormality kid walks in, the mother's looking at you, sort of sizing you up, assessing whether you have any clue what she's talking about. The same thing occurs with LVAD. They're looking at you and saying, do you know about what an LVAD is, and can you treat me with good care? So the way I start this conversation out is I ask them what their destination is. And there's really three different places. Either their goal is to get a heart transplant, either their goal is to get off of this pump and a cure, or it is to use this as a destination therapy in and of itself. So if it's the end of the road, there's really no other option. I mean, they're not going to get a transplant. They may use this as a destination. Increasingly, patients are using this as a destination just because they don't want to go through the hassle or the potential complications of getting a transplant. And so that does occur. The bridge to a cure, that third category, is usually the younger patient, the patient that had like a viral myocarditis, and they need several months to a year to get their heart to get over the stunning. And so they're putting the LVAD in and hoping that the EF will improve such that they can take the pump out. So that can give you a little bit of a heads up and say as far as where their goals are and give you some credence with the patient. Now, what happens? What goes wrong with these? Well, the major things are bleeding and driveline infections. Driveline infections occur because you've got this nidus, this wire coming out of the body, and they're indolent, they're hard to treat, they're hard to get rid of. They occasionally can cause systemic bacteremia, but these are things that you can, these are decisions you can make in conjunction with whoever knows the patient. And I think if there was one take-home point from this lecture is somebody knows about this patient. There was upward of $200,000 spent to get this thing in, and so some hospital, some surgeon, and some doctor is taking care of this patient. So your goal in someone that is not dying in front of you is find out who that is and get them on the phone. Also, the last thing you want to do is admit one of these patients to a hospital that is not familiar with dealing with them. You do not want some nurse taking care of them on the floor that has never seen this, because the electrical components of this, dealing with the batteries, dealing with the RPMs as an inpatient, is a problem. And so you're going to be looking to transfer these patients if you don't have that capability in your facility. All right, so back to the complications. So yeah, driveline infections. The second thing is bleeding. Bleeding occurs, they're on, usually on Coumadin, this generation in particular, this generation of LVADs. But even if they're not on Coumadin, even if they've gotten taken off because of some contraindication, they're still at increased risk. And that's because of this acquired von Willebrand's factor deficiency. And so just know that if someone comes in with a head bonk, an LVAD head bonk, you need to be thinking like, I probably should CT this patient. And then additionally, if they have signs of GI bleed, just know that this might not just be a small thing. This may be a major deal. The real crux of this talk, though, is this idea of the LVAD in extremis. And I use the word in extremis because you may not really know what's going on with them. You're going to see a patient that comes into your ER that's got that you can't assess their circulatory status quickly, and they may be altered. So you don't know if they just had a seizure. You don't know if they're hypoglycemic, any numbers of things from altered mental status, or if they're dead. And so judging that quickly is going to be important. And the way that I like to do this is my first thing I do when I'm approaching to someone that's in extremis is I go up and I listen to their heart. And I listen for the hum of that motor. If I hear the hum of the motor, good things are happening. Now, if it's not working, it's your A1 priority to try and get that thing working. Now, there's certain things that could go wrong. You could have a pump thrombosis or a mechanical failure that you can't correct. But if they're coming in that situation, no one's going to be able to correct it. So you want to make sure that you're not missing correctable things to keep that's keeping that pump from working. And what that's going to entail is looking for through all the wires that come out of the body that go to the system controller, that go out to the battery pack. You take them out and you plug them back in and you see if there's any problems with the connection there. Additionally, you want to see what's the battery life on those batteries. You push a little button on the side of them and it'll tell you what percent battery is left, just like your Duracell or whatever battery where you can get the package and see how much juice is left. You can do the same thing with these LVADs. Now, if they brought their extra batteries, fantastic, use them. There's also the possibility that they would bring their power pack, which allows the LVAD to be plugged into the wall. If they did, great, use it. Your facility may have one if you're an LVAD center, and use that one if you can. But otherwise, you're going to be up a creek if you can't get that pump working. So if that's the case, then you need to run that code just like you would a usual code, which includes CPR, ACLS, the like. All right, so now what happens if you've got an LVAD in extremis and the pump is working? Well, the things that you're going to be looking for are your usual stuff in a code. You're going to put them on the monitor. You're going to get an EKG. You're going to assess for a blood pressure. And so how do you get a blood pressure in someone that's on an LVAD? You do it through a portable blood pressure cuff, and you listen to it manually, or you use an ultrasound Doppler and you find out their MAP, their mean arterial pressure. Their MAP should be essentially the same as you and I, 65 to 90. If they're hypotensive or if they have no pressure, then you know you have big problems. So the second thing is, after you've done that, you are looking at their monitor. If they're in VFib or VTAC, this is a problem. You can shock them. You can defibrillate them. You want to try and avoid putting the electricity right through the pump, but in your usual manner of pushing on the anterior chest and the axilla, or in the back, you will likely avoid doing direct defibrillation right through the machine. We've had patients actually drive themselves to our hospital in VTAC and VFib. In fact, we've even had one in asystole that drove themselves to the hospital just because the pulmonary vascular resistance was low enough where the machine was able to just pull blood right through the right side of the heart. All right, so VTAC, VFib, arrhythmia, STEMI. Right-sided STEMI in particular, this can be really important because the patient may have a need for that flow to occur. Their PVR may be too high, and so treating a right-sided MI is important. You can do this. You can take them to the cath lab. In fact, I would suggest it. The other thing is that they may need a small bolus of fluids, just like our right-sided MIs without an LVAD. That small bolus of fluid may help them out a lot. In addition to this, you need to remember that these patients are CHF patients. They're usually on diuretics, and so they may be hypovolemic. And being hypovolemic is a big problem with an LVAD. So giving them fluids, even patients in CHF, can improve them. The other caveat with these people that are on diuretics is that they can be hyper-K or hypo-K, and this can lead to problems with dysfunction with their heart. So just like your dialysis patient, you need to get that K fast, whether it's via ISTAT, VBG, ABG, whatever it is, just get that K fast and treat it appropriately. Also, we know that just like other patients, these patients can get septic, and so you need to treat them aggressively, whether that's with fluids or pressors, levofed, vasopressin that you may use on your typical sepsis patient, totally recommended. But you need to sort of assess also whether if there is some cardiac dysfunction that you may want to add a different pressor, meaning these patients pre-LVAD were highly dependent on inotropes, meaning that they were often on dobutamine or milrinone drips at home, and so using a little bit of that may actually help them. Okay, so now into these pump-specific problems, and there's really only three of them. One is a pump thrombosis, and this means that the clot got into that rotor down there and it's clogging it up. So giving a little heparin can help them out as well, and you can use TPA as well if you get into a bind. This also occurs for the idea of a big PE that may occur with an LVAD as well. You can use thrombolytics. The other thing is this idea of aortic insufficiency. About 20% of people who get LVADs at 1 year out get aortic insufficiency. And if you sort of visualize this, so you got the blood going out of the left ventricle, going up into the aorta. If you have aortic insufficiency, the blood's now going to get sucked back through the left ventricle, and you're just going to get this closed loop and give no pressure to the body. So just this would be a functioning pump with a low MAP. That's what aortic insufficiency is going to look like, and you're going to need to get CT surgery involved early, and you're going to need to get a formal echo. Final thing here is this idea of hypoxia and acidosis, and this leads to high pulmonary vascular resistance, and this can be problematic for the pump that's trying to draw blood through there. So improving those with either supplemental oxygen, intubation, or bicarb as needed can also help out. This sort of leads itself into an interesting concept that occurs in LVAD. So if you get a little hypovolemic or your PVR goes up a bit and you're not getting blood into that left ventricle, you're going to get the pump pulling blood, but not enough is returning. And when that happens, the walls of the ventricle actually get sucked in on themselves. And this is called a suction event. Now, that brain that I talked to you about, the system controller, it knows about this and it understands this concept. And when it senses that that is happening, it will drop the RPMs and then slowly bring them back up such that the sides of the ventricles can reaccumulate with blood and decrease the likelihood of this happening again. Now, if they're continuing to have the same symptoms, low volume, this may happen recurrently, and so you should just be sort of aware of this concept. All right. Big question that's asked a lot with LVADs is, can I do CPR? Now, this is sort of a ridiculous question in that if someone is in the state where they need CPR, there's not very good things happening with them. Can you push out an LVAD? Can you actually dislodge one by doing CPR? Yes, it's theoretically possible. Is that something that should limit your ability to do CPR? I say no. You'll see from the manufacturers that they'll recommend against this, but you got to do what you got to do. It's sort of like doing a thoracotomy without a trauma surgeon on board. You've got to save the guy's life. You got to save the guy's life, and so do what you got to do. But just understand that there's always that risk that you could dislodge the inflow cannula. So let's sum things up. Really, what you need to take home is sort of, what am I going to do? Well, given a little bolus of fluids might be good. Checking their K is good. Given some heparin might be good if you're thinking about a pump thrombosis. And then the idea of treating the arrhythmia and treating the STEMI as you normally would goes for it as well. All right. Well, I hope that helped, Scott. I hope your listeners enjoyed it. And I'll talk to you later.
Well, I don't know about you folks, but I enjoyed it. So what do we have as take-home points here? Well, first of all, as soon as these patients appear in your emergency department, call their VAD coordinator. Call someone who knows this patient, who knows what device they have. There should be a phone number around their waist or certainly attached to their battery pack. Somewhere there is a number. Find that number and call those people ASAP. You may not feel a pulse on these patients. Put a stethoscope on their heart and see if you hear that motor. If you don't, then these patients are in big, big trouble. And you should still be able to get a MAP, a mean arterial pressure, and that should be normal. It should be around 65 at the minimum. If it's lower than that, you have a problem. At the same time, check your other signs of perfusion, mental status, skin color, and temperature. And then slap on the echo probe. And that's going to tell you, do they have a small RV? It seems like they're probably going to need some volume. Do they have a big RV? There could be problems with pulmonary hypertension, which might be from hypoxemia or acidosis. There could be right heart strain from an ST elevation MI. Or they could start of pump failure. That could be pump thrombosis. If you can't figure out anything else that's causing these problems, consider giving these folks heparin. Now, Zach says you actually have to move to TPA sometimes, but I'd probably want some confirmation about exactly what's going on or have ruled out all other possible causes before I got to that point. If the machine's not running, check to make sure the batteries are still going. Make sure there are extra batteries. Even if the machine's working right now just fine, those could run out. You should be able to check on the battery itself how long you have left. Make sure all the lines are connected. These folks bleed, and most of them are anticoagulated or at least on antiplatelet drugs. If they come in with new neuro findings, it's a hemorrhagic stroke until proven otherwise. That's what does in many of these patients. If these patients appear infected and you don't have a source, it's a driveline infection until proven otherwise. Cover them for hospital-acquired infection and make sure you get cultures. If the patient is coding, CPR can dislodge the LVAD from their ventricle or aorta. That's considered bad, I think. I mean, I'm no cardiothoracic surgeon, but a big gaping hole in either of those places does not seem like a good thing. So you're going to avoid CPR unless you absolutely have no other choice. Meaning if the patient has any MAP at all, do not do CPR. But if they have no MAP and they're getting no perfusion whatsoever to the brain, then you might not have any choice, but you have to use any clinical judgment you have about the circumstance to make that decision. I can't tell you what to do because if you rip that thing out of the aorta, I'm just holding up my hands and saying, I didn't tell this guy a thing. All right, there is more stuff in the show notes, a lot more actually, both a summary by me, but more importantly, these folks from my LVAD.com, mylvad.com, have an insanely good field guide that lists all the devices out there, what to do for the individual devices, and how to handle these situations. Go to the show notes and print out that PDF. Stick it somewhere so you know where it is. This is really the resource you want. I don't know who's funding these guys, but they deserve more money because it's really, really good. All right, I'm going to stop there. Scott Weingart for MCRIT Podcast, and thanking Zach Shiner from Sharp Memorial in San Diego for that excellent presentation. I will talk to you folks very, very soon.